This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin and Sharmila Ganesan. Tonight, a closer look at the push to track refugees in our country.
This is, of course, through the Home Ministry's Tracking Refugees Information System, or TRIS. First, we try to understand the system, how it'll work and what some of the pushback has been, and then what else should be put in place to allow refugees to live and work with dignity in Malaysia.
So tell us, do you support this move from the government? You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08, and basically, last Friday, the government approved the adoption of TRIS, the Tracking Refugees Information System, which will require all UNHCR cardholders to register and allow the government to track their whereabouts. Now, according to its official website, TRIS is an initiative to collect personal and biometric information of UNHCR cardholders to be included in a national database with the aim of managing the situation when it comes to refugees in Malaysia. The Home Minister, Dato' Sri Hamzah Zainuddin, said that it would help ensure whether refugees are living here for the purpose of employment or, and I quote, to carry out other matters which could be improved through the policy approved by the National Security Council. He also said that the implementation of the system has been handed over to a company.
Right. So if we look at how it works, refugees and asylum seekers aged between 19 and 59 here are required to pay 500 ringgit to be officially registered under this TRIS system. Once they have, they'll be issued a special identification card known as MyRC. The document is free for children and senior citizens. According to the minister, as well as the website, registering under TRIS will minimize the risk of being arrested and detained and will allow registered individuals to stay temporarily in Malaysia based on the validity of the card. MyRC can also be used as a travel document for domestic flights. There is some talk of an opportunity to work, but this will be subject to permission from the government as well as the ability of the individual. On paper, I suppose, it seems like it's meant to be a management system. However, there are a lot of criticisms and concerns from groups that speak on behalf of refugees.
So in a joint statement, the Alliance of Chin Refugees and Beyond Borders actually urged the Home Minister to engage with refugee community leaders and civil society organizations about the system before proceeding, saying that it is invasive, dehumanizing and open to abuse, expressing concern that refugees will become easy targets for arrests, detention and even deportation, pointing out also that the system would further control refugees' freedom of movement, which may hamper livelihoods. And I think it's quite important to look at the context here, right? Because if we focus purely on not even the name of the system, which I think has some issues, but if we focus on what it's ostensibly set out to do, in other words, to say, hey, just register with us so that we know where you live, we know where you are, and we know what your status is. I think that in and of itself seems harmless enough, especially if it then goes on to enable people to do things like work or travel, which the MyRC card supposedly, under certain circumstances, would allow you to do. But the larger context, I think, is the treatment around migrants and refugees, which might explain, I think, why it is that they don't necessarily want to provide authorities, hey, come find me here. Come raid here. Come arrest me here. Because we've seen so many things. We've seen raids happen in refugee communities, I think, earlier this year. Once there has been detention or people in detention,
Yes. So I think it comes down to, you know, if you're a member of the refugee community, the notion of support from our government hasn't necessarily been forthcoming. Instead, I think what they might feel is more, I think, worry and concern that the system may add to the challenges they already face being here, right? And two things that have been brought up, particularly as cause for concern. One, that 500 ringgit fee to register. And two, the fact that this is being handed over to a private company. Both of those, I think, have opened up questions about, one, why charge for something like this? And it is actually a pretty high amount. Secondly, what happens to that data? And what kind of assurance do we have in terms of how that data is going to be used? And to go back to what you said, Lynn, that on paper, sure, a system to have information on hand, but then the UNHCR card already does that. Mm. So there's also the question about then, why is this necessary? What would this add? Or in some cases, what would it take away? And I think that's the question. Those are some of the questions that have come up that we will be addressing in today's show.
So we're talking about TRIS, in other words, the Tracking Refugees Information System that has been approved for use by the government. And we want to hear from you. Do you support this move? You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Mahi Ramakrishnan, President of Beyond Borders. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Banish fraudulent maneuvers. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:15. You're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila, and we're talking today about the Tracking Refugees Information System, or TRIS, which has been approved for use, but has also received some pushback. And we'd like to hear from you. Basically, do you support this move from the government to have UNHCR card holders register for a separate card that's going to replace the UNHCR card? It's a bit of a thing. Anyway, you can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. On the line with us is Mahi Ramakrishnan, President of Beyond Borders. Mahi, thank you so much for speaking with us.
No worries. Thanks a lot for the invitation.
So could you walk us through how the system would work?
Actually, all we know is that TRIS was already in existence from 2017. And like you rightfully pointed out, refugees who are registered with TRIS will actually get a MyRC card. But the problem here is that it doesn't give them additional privileges or protection even. And there have been reports that even those with the MyRC card have been arrested, they have been detained. So we don't even know if the different relevant authorities are actually on the same page. Now, what is the concern here is the fact that the government now, through the announcement that we just heard from the Home Minister, is trying to expand the provision under TRIS. And that includes them making registration with TRIS mandatory for all those who actually hold UNHCR card. And that brings about its own consequences and raises a lot of questions because of the fact that it can be, it is intrusive, it's invasive, and it can be open to abuse.
So before we get into that, how do the MyRC cards differ from the UNHCR cards? And will refugees then lose the UNHCR cards and only have to hold MyRC moving forward?
Actually, I have no answers. I don't even think anyone knows about these detailed information. Because, you know, the question here is, UNHCR has a protection mandate and it has been working to keep that protection mandate, and it has registered refugees and it has recognized them as refugees and it has given them the UNHCR card. So your question is valid. Why duplicate it? Why do you need another card by the government of Malaysia when it can work together with the UNHCR in terms of looking at what can be done? Because Malaysia too has its obligation to protect the rights and interests of refugees and asylum seekers as well. But instead of doing that, it has come up with a new card. And also there is an element of coercion when it says that all refugees who have UNHCR cards now need to register with TRIS as well, because they would like to know where the refugees live. They would like to make employment possible, and also other matters. Now, my question is, what are the other matters? We have been seeing an increase in immigration rates and forced migrants. I'm talking about both refugees and migrants. They get swept up. And sometimes refugees tell us that even though they show that they have an app with the UNHCR registration, the immigration will say things like, well, we need to check it. And it may take them like 2 weeks to check it. So you see, the system is there. but, you know, it's not being implemented because different authorities are not actually recognizing the UNHCR card, and that itself is a problem. So now we have another card, and it's just creating a lot of confusion because, just like you, I do not understand that, you know, once they register with MyRC, does that mean that they lose the UNHCR card? And if that's the case, then they lose international protection.
So to come down to it then, refugee groups, including Beyond Borders, of course, have criticized TRIS for being invasive, dehumanizing, open to abuse. Can you tell us about some of the specific concerns here?
Well, my concern is that, you know, once they know exactly where the refugees are, then they can track their movements. There can be immigration raids into those areas as well, because, you know, at the end of the day, the government will always say that it has not ratified the convention, which means it does not have to recognize the rights of refugees. Now, that in itself is wrong, because we have got obligations under international law and humanitarian principles, you know, CEDAW or the CRC being signatory to the UN SDG 2030 and so on and so forth. And also, you know, it's not like we have been committed to the international protocols, like, for example, the non-refoulement, which says that you cannot send people back to an area where they will face more persecution. But we have pushed back Rohingya boats with no qualms whatsoever. And also, if you remember, in 2020, the government said, you know, whether you're refugees or migrants, come out, get yourself tested, get the vaccination done, because, you know, it's not like they're going to use that and do a witch hunt later, which it actually did. And then, you know, there was also an immigration raid, and migrants and refugees were all holed up together. And, you know, many had horror stories to talk about, you know, weeks later. So the fact is, this is a government which has not been committed to international law or humanitarian principles when it comes to the protection of refugees. And it has gone back on its promise. And we see a very hostile Home Minister, Hamza Zainuddin, who has got no qualms about raids and, you know, holding up and detaining and arresting refugees and migrants as well. So this raises a lot of questions as to why, you know, or what kind of abuse this registration will actually entail for refugees.
So the argument here from the Home Ministry is that this system will allow for better management of refugees in the country. Is there any merit there? How would you respond to that?
I mean, when you say that you do not recognize refugees, what are you managing? If you want to manage refugees, why are you not working together with UNHCR? They also said that one of the main reasons is to get employment possibilities going. But that is a policy. And, you know, we have been going back and forth about the right to work for refugees, whether it was under UMNO and then whether it was under Pakatan Harapan, and now back to UMNO. So the fact is, you know, it takes political will. We already have a legal framework in place that can give them the right to work, like the IMM 13 under the Immigration Act. So if the government is really serious about job opportunities and the right to work for refugees, then they can actually look at IMM 13. And they can, of course, liaise and work together with the UNHCR. There is no need for them to duplicate the registration process of the UNHCR because, you know, we do not understand what are the motivations. You know, and the fact is, we have an election, an impending election. So I ask myself, you know, is it the government's way of demonizing refugees? Because that's what the government does. It demonizes migrant workers. It demonizes refugees as well. So my question is it playing a strategic game as to incite fear amongst the population? What is the government actually trying to do? And we are seeing an increase in rates as well. So it's not like the government, you know, I will trust the government or the Home Minister. And also this whole thing is so vague, you know. And firstly, there's also been absolutely no consultation with key stakeholders, the communities themselves who are going to be affected, as well as CSOs. And that really makes it incredibly difficult for us to say, yes, go ahead. We know that you have got good intention.
So one tricky element here, I think, is also that the mandate here now is for all UNHCR cardholders to register with TRIS. But in the first place, the UNHCR card is not something that all refugees have. So what happens here?
Exactly. So if you're targeting, you know, the thing is, there has been a kind of a war or a tiff or a fight or whatever you prefer to call it between UNHCR and the government. They have been asking for information. They have been asking for data. They have been asking for for more detailed information about the whereabouts and the addresses and other details about the refugees from the UNHCR. And the UNHCR has rightfully said no. So I just feel like this is another way of actually them, muscling or pressuring the UNHCR, or pressuring to get enough information, you know, indirectly. Because like you rightfully pointed out, what about those refugees who have not, or the asylum seekers who have not been, who have not gone through the system, who do not have the UNHCR cards, then what? So you can see that there are lots of gaps here. And again, you know, that makes the intention of the Malaysian government that much more dubious.
There have been some consistent points of contention. One is the cost of that registration, which is 500 ringgit. What do you make of this?
Oh my God, it's an exorbitant fee. I mean, 500 ringgit for refugees, and what do they get in return? Absolutely no protection. You know, it doesn't give them special privileges or benefits or perks. You know, one of the things in which the government can look at, and the UNHCR can actually look at as a way of ironing out hostility and allowing for independence and right to work and livelihood, is to actually allow for movement, whether it's within the country or even within the region, so that refugees can move and they can make money and they can earn a living and they can take care of themselves. Now, we have not really seen that happening. So, you know, I don't really understand when they, you know for a fact that they are actually making bits and pieces here and there, especially since they also cannot work legally in the country. Then why charge them the 500 ringgit? And also now we have another a specific company which is going to take over the registration. I mean, it's so again, I ask myself, you know, is someone set to make big money out of this?
You brought up the company. It's going to be a private company implementing the system. What potential issues could arise from this?
I mean, the fact that, you know, it's open to corruption. We do not know about data safety and security. We do not know how the data that is going to be stored by the company will actually be used. I mean, look at our own My Sejahtera. We don't really have to go far. And the kind of brouhaha that actually broke out, right? So how do we know what the company is going to do with the kind of data that it actually has? I mean, data can be abused, right? I mean, I'm not saying that Malaysia is the only country that's using surveillance. Every country in the world, whether it's border control in the European Union and member states, the kind of surveillance that you have in camps in from all the way from, all the way in Greece, for example, or even the camps in Kenya, for example, that uses biometrics or all kinds of data-driven technology to actually get more information. So it is happening. It is intrusive. But also it's like to actually gauge how the data is going to be used, which company is the one that is actually been, that is actually going to do the data collection. All of this is important. And the fact that we do not know answers to so many questions, that it's almost shrouded in secrecy, makes it that much more frightening and also raises the questions as to how dangerous this is going to be.
So we have, I think, a few minutes left with you. So far, the Alliance of Chin Refugees and Beyond Borders have asked for the Home Ministry and Minister to engage with refugee community leaders and civil society organizations. What kind of reforms would you like to discuss with him?
Actually, you know, I believe in community-led engagement. So the main reason to ask for the meeting with the Home Minister is to actually get the community leaders, those who will be affected, to actually sit across the table from the minister and to have this conversation and also to kind of like, you know, talk to him about their concerns and also to kind of pinpoint the fact that we do have obligations even if we have not ratified the convention and to also talk to the Home Minister about the right to work as opposed to intrusive, punitive technology that will rob refugees of the dignity and also, you know, deny them proper livelihood as well. So it's really to have a conversation going, to have that engagement going so that the Home Minister can make informed decisions, so that the Home Minister can actually talk to these refugees. Now I ask myself, has he even spoken to any one of them before he comes up with these kinds of technologies and says that it needs to be implemented right away? Because I doubt that he has. So I think he really needs to hear from them, and that is really important.
Mahi, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Most welcome. Thank you.
That was Mahi Ramakrishnan, president of Beyond Borders, talking to us about the TRIS I almost said TRIS system, but talking to us about TRIS, which is the Tracking Refugees Information System. The government approved the adoption of this last Friday, and there has been some pushback, including from Beyond Borders. So we wanted to hear a bit more about what we know of the system right now, but also why there has been that criticism. And that will set us up for the second half of our show, in which we look at essentially what we need in our country right now in order to have refugees basically live and work with dignity, which is something that I would argue is a basic human right. Let us know, do you support this move from the government? We're already getting so many messages, which we'll come back for as well. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:38 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. And tonight we are looking at TRIS, or what is the Home Ministry's Tracking Refugees Information System. Essentially, they're asking for all UNHCR cardholders to register, allowing the government to track their whereabouts, to obtain biometric information, and that they will then get a card called MyRC. They'll have to pay 500 ringgit, not children or senior citizens, but everyone else. And essentially, it can be used as a travel document domestically and possibly, but not confirmedly, allow people to work. So we've been asking you for your thoughts on this. Do you support this move from the government? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at PFM Radio. Before we get to our next guest, a look at the messages where we've got, I think, a mix of opinions.
Well, let's start with this from Danny, who basically says, well, can they get jobs after getting the card? If not, it's a waste of time and a terrible idea. Meh, sounds like an infringement of basic human rights. And, you know, I think that point about jobs is a fair one, because if indeed that the MyRC will allow refugees to get employment, which is something they have been asking for ages now, then perhaps more details need to be shared on how exactly.
You know, I'm not necessarily somebody who believes that working for the country or working in the country, contributing to nation building, is the only reason why we should take in refugees. So I want to make that clear, that I don't necessarily believe that working is the only reason you should allow people into the, you know, in. But having said that, when we were talking about this off air, the amount of times I asked, so wait, can they work? Can they not work? Does that mean that they'll be able to get jobs? And I think that that's because the ability to work, or rather the lack thereof, has been one of the central narratives in this conversation about refugees. And so if this does not come with that, then like you, Danny, I have an awful lot of questions. Rosmawati says, TRIS, another excuse to spend taxpayers' money, which will go nowhere. And if I'm a refugee, I would not pay a single cent to make myself known to authorities, let alone pay out 500 ringgit.
Well, Johnny is saying almost exactly that. They say, sounds fishy. Will it actually serve the original intention a few years later? Because the first red flag is that the fee is extremely high. If it's inclusive of a system database storing, maybe it's possible. Second red flag, the system is carried out by a private company. Third red flag, the system is built to store refugee staying location and other information, which seems redundant when there's already a UNHCR card that has that minus the location info.
So a counterpoint is coming by way of Christopher, who says, why is your guest so negatively speculative about TRIS? Does she want the government to roll out the red carpet? Why so secretive? Refugees are in our house. Please respect our house rules. Please follow and comply with respect as a guest of Malaysia.
So the thing is, I've heard the sentiment echoed quite a bit. And I think partly the challenge here is that, as I said early on in the show, the treatment of refugees here, and not necessarily from the government alone,
is not that of a guest.
Is not that of a guest. And therefore, I don't think we are currently in a position to say, hey, we just want to know where you are so that, because we care about your well-being. And so I think that you first have to gain trust before you want to put in place a system like this.
So for me, there is a sea, an entire sea of possibilities that exist between TRIS and a red carpet. So I think that it doesn't have to be one or the other, right? And like I said, if there is a system that logs information that is useful and then goes on to contribute towards a larger infrastructure that allows for refugees, which we assume or whom we assume will continue to come to our shores, to work, to live well, to, you know, be able to participate in our nation, then I wouldn't say I'm all for it, but I'm tentatively for it, right? In this case, though, as is coming through in a number of messages, until there are more details, which may be forthcoming, it feels like a duplication. But keep those thoughts coming. We're talking today about TRIS, which is the Tracking Refugees Information System that's been approved for use by the government last Friday, which ostensibly will require all UNHCR cardholders to register to get that card replaced by another card, the MyRC. So we'd like to hear from you. Are you in support of this move? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now, having laid out, I guess, the groundwork of what TRIS is, what some of the issues are, we wanted to look at alternatives, right? Or other things that could be done to basically support or, you know, have refugees live conducive lives here in our country. Joining us for that is Adrian Pereira, Executive Director at the North-South Initiative. Adrian, always good to have you with us.
Hi, happy to be here.
So we've been talking about TRIS, and this is something you've commented on as well. What are your views on the system, and would it be helpful in supporting refugees who live here?
Yeah, so Malaysia is famous for making ad hoc policies without much research and evidence-driven debates. So TRIS is highly questionable because it's not only going to duplicate what is already being done by UNHCR, but the concept of, you know, having more surveillance it itself vilifies the community, and it's going to create a stigma that would make life very difficult for refugees and asylum seekers, because you're creating an image that, hey, you know, these guys are here, we need to keep an eye on them. But in reality, they have hardly caused much problems in the country.
I think it's important to contextualize this, right? Could you describe what the living and working conditions are like for refugees who live in Malaysia?
Yeah, so refugees, we have met some from the lower wage communities. We have met some from the upper income communities. So just like Malaysians, some would struggle in terms of, you know, putting food on the table. Some with a bit more skill sets would, you know, have a better economic condition. So it really depends. What has made it difficult for them to have a livelihood and live with dignity is not being able to work with the proper standards and rights. That has caused them to not be able to live in proper conditions, have the best nutrition, and, you know, live with all the other necessities and, you know, maybe even privileges which we would like to live with.
So I know this is a bit of a tough question. It's a general question in some senses. But what are the most immediate protections and provisions that are needed?
So Malaysia doesn't have a law that governs asylum seekers and refugees. So without a fundamental law in place, everything else that is done is usually an ad hoc idea or a reactionary proposal. I mean, it's not that Malaysia doesn't have some positive track records in helping the refugee and asylum community. I think when Vietnam and Cambodia had problems back home, to a certain degree, yes, we welcomed the communities, but not in the best or most perfect manner. But without that overarching law, everything else, every other right, every other social justice aspect would be very hard to fulfill. Yeah.
We're speaking today with Adrian Pereira, Executive Director at the North-South Initiative. We'll continue our conversation shortly after this. We'd like to hear from you, though. We're talking about TRIS, the Tracking Refugees Information System. Is this a move you support? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Beyond Fulfilling Manifesto, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It is 6:48. You're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We're talking today about refugees. More specifically, we're discussing the adoption of the Tracking Refugees Information System and asking you whether this is something that you're in support of. You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us. And now we're continuing our conversation with Adrian Pereira, Executive Director at the North-South Initiative, essentially on, okay, so there's TRIS, but what else would be required, or what other things could we have in place for refugees in our country? So, Adrian, Malaysia isn't party to any international conventions that recognize the rights and statuses of refugees. Why is there this resistance to granting refugee status to those who are already living in the country?
So, the granting of refugee status actually depends on the UNHCR, which is a designated UN body to manage asylum seekers and refugees. So the government actually doesn't have to participate in this process because there's already the competent body. What the government can do is make the process smoother by not interfering and not creating a hostile environment that, you know, makes the welcoming of asylum seekers difficult, or in fact over-securitizing the issue, which we have been doing traditionally. In fact, the National Security Council has put migration as one of the security concerns, which is a bit unreasonable to a certain degree. And, you know, we can all understand that every country has its right to protect its sovereignty, but in Malaysia, many fundamental institutions have not proven to be able to have a certain degree of credibility according to international standards. So all the more, until that happens, I think the government should stay out of this process.
Can a type of legal framework still be put in place without ratifying these international conventions?
Yes, like I said earlier, Malaysia has in the past welcomed refugees and asylum seekers from countries facing war. So it's not that we must ratify the convention before, you know, implementing a local framework. But if you look at what is happening in the labour migration sector, which also doesn't have a comprehensive policy, then all the problems in the world will follow if we don't have that legal framework. So it can be done. It's already happening. For example, there are directives on how refugees can work in the informal sector, but this doesn't ensure that we have decent work conditions or work conditions as per ILO standards.
So on the subject of work, it is always brought up that allowing refugees proper work permits would not just provide them dignified employment, but would also address the severe issues of labour shortage that we're having and have been having for some time now. What are the gaps that prevent this from actually happening?
Yeah, so I agree with the conversation earlier that, you know, we shouldn't be providing refugee status or allowing them to work just to help enhance the Malaysian economy and solving the labour shortage. We must take note that refugees and migrant workers are here for different reasons, but we should treat both with dignity and equality. So what has happened is the government has been talking about the right to work for refugees over the last many years. Why it has failed to materialize, to me, is there's a lot of, or there's a lack of research, proper research, objective research on this. And hence, we continue to over-securitize the issue and think that, you know, once we allow refugees to work, it would open the floodgates. But there's no real data to prove this, as, you know, refugees are here because they're forced to leave homeland, and they're not here to you know, with the purpose of looking for work.
Now, we are not a permanent settlement point for refugees. Instead, we are often viewed as a midway before they are permanently resettled. Taking that into consideration, what would be a fair and effective asylum system for us? Are there perhaps cues that we could take from other countries?
Yeah, first of all, we need to be a bit more welcoming to refugees and asylum seekers, stop the xenophobic campaigns and racist campaigns in the media and by certain government agencies. I think that would be a good start. In the past, there was one very strange proposal of an asylum seeker and refugee swap with Australia. So it was so bizarre that these two countries, you know, wanted to monetize this whole process and, you know, benefit from it. And this was a bad example of what how we should treat refugees and asylum seekers. But if you want a bit more positive story, I think Philippines has ratified the Refugee Convention, and the state itself would facilitate a very smooth and dignified resettlement process and even asylum seeking process with the necessary legal aid. So there are also other countries like I think Italy, if I'm not mistaken, during COVID, you know, didn't close its borders to ensure that, you know, refugees who are fleeing difficult conditions had access. So there are some good stories here and there, but the swap with Australia was one of the shocking not to do things. Yeah.
Adrian, what are the long-term risks of leaving generations of refugees stateless and without citizenship, and also often really in a cycle of poverty because of the inability to work?
So if you have been following the Family Frontiers campaign, we have heard, you know, how the mothers struggle with their children not getting citizenship. So very similar conditions are faced by refugees and their children. We have seen 2 to 3 generations who are being stateless here, who are yet to receive their refugee cards. So naturally, once you're not allowed to get work, you're not allowed to enter the education institutions, life can really get difficult and desperate to a certain degree. And unfortunately, Malaysia doesn't have the social protection offered to stateless. So I think it's not difficult to imagine what the social impact could be. And of course, when it comes to health issues, when one portion of the community is unhealthy, it would definitely have an impact on everyone. So we should ensure that refugees have the right to work and also dignified living conditions in Malaysia.
Adrian, what would you like to leave us with?
I would like to advise or hope that all Malaysians would look at refugees in a more empathetic manner. And with the volatility of the world today, anyone, including Malaysians, could one day end up as a refugee. And if you look at over the last 3 to 4 years, how our political instability has continued. And, you know, in the blink of an eye, anything could happen and we could end up as a refugee and asylum seeker. So let's not take our brothers and sisters for granted. Let's treat them with dignity, and hopefully one day we would not have to leave our country.
Adrian, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
That was Adrian Pereira, Executive Director of the North-South Initiative, explaining basically what else we need to have in place, right? Or instead of the Tracking Refugees Information System, which is something that has been approved for use. And we've been asking you essentially, is this a move you support? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us. We've got time for some messages.
So a number of them circle very similar points. Munif says, ironically, it's not even about refugees. It's just an initiative to award cronies with tenders and contracts. Whatever injustice or atrocities can always be traced back to the good old ringgit. If, say, more money can be made by ignoring refugees, this initiative would evaporate faster than you can blink.
Yeah, and that is just cycling through, like you said, a number of different messages all echoing the same point. Crispy Bacon, for example, simply says, people wondering why we're reinventing the wheel? Simple answer is new projects equals budgets. You help me, I help you. And so here's the thing, right? We have seen projects that have a similar feel in the past. And I think that that's where this sort of criticism is coming from. And so to get around it, therefore, we would need more details, right? And I think that that's the issue here, that even in trying to talk about it, it's difficult to find a clear-cut difference or differentiation point as to why this exists.
The word ad hoc was brought up quite a bit in our conversation today. And I think that's exactly the problem, that there doesn't seem to be enough planning and enough justification for putting something like this in place.
Legion, for example, asks, when setting this up, were the refugees and NGOs even consulted? And, you know, that's actually something that they're calling for. So there is that. And we can take away, I suppose, what we can from the fact that they're actually asking for more consultation and an actual sit down. Keep those thoughts coming. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.